Chapter 28, The Silversmiths Riot at Ephesus. For more than 3 years Ephesus was the center of Paul's work. A flourishing church was raised up, and from this city the gospel spread throughout Asia among both Jews and Gentiles. The apostle now resolved in the Spirit to pass through Macedonia and Achaia and go to Jerusalem, saying, "After I have been there, I must also see Rome." In harmony with this plan he sent into Macedonia two of his helpers, Timothy and Erastus, but feeling that Ephesus still demanded his presence, he decided to remain until after Pentecost. An event soon occurred, however, which hastened his departure. Once a year, special ceremonies were held at Ephesus in honor of the goddess Diana. These attracted great numbers of people. This gala season was a trying time for those who had newly come to the faith. The believers who met in the school of Tyrannus were an inharmonious note in the festive chorus, and ridicule and insult were freely heaped on them. Paul's labors had given the heathen worship a telling blow, and there was a perceptible falling off in attendance at the national festival and in the enthusiasm of the worshippers. The influence of his teachings extended far beyond the actual converts. Many who had not accepted the new doctrines became so far enlightened as to lose all confidence in their heathen gods. There existed also another cause of dissatisfaction. A profitable business had grown up from the sale of small shrines and images, modeled after the temple and image of Diana. Those in this industry found their gains diminishing, and all attributed the unwelcome change to Paul's labors. Demetrius, a manufacturer of silver shrines, calling together the workmen of his craft, said, "Men, you know that from this business we have our wealth. And you see and hear that not only at Ephesus but almost throughout all Asia this Paul has persuaded and turned away a considerable company of people, saying that gods made with hands are not gods. And there is danger not only that this trade of ours may come into disrepute but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis, Diana, may count for nothing, and that she may even be deposed from her magnificence." The excitable people were enraged, and cried out, "Great is Artemis, Diana, of the Ephesians." A report of this speech was rapidly circulated, and the city was filled with confusion. Search was made for Paul, but the apostle was not to be found. His brethren had hurried him from the place. Angels had been sent to guard the apostle. His time to die a martyr had not yet come. Failing to find the object of their wrath, the mob seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians who were Paul's companions in travel, and with these they rushed together into the theater. The apostle eager to defend truth before the multitude. Paul, not far distant, soon learned of the peril of his brethren. Forgetful of his own safety, he desired to go at once to the theater to address the rioters. But the disciples would not let him. No serious harm to Gaius and Aristarchus was apprehended, but should the apostle's careworn face be seen, it would arouse the worst passions of the mob, and there would not be the least human possibility of saving his life. Paul was at last deterred by a message from the theater. Friends of his sent to him and begged him not to venture into the theater. The tumult there was continually increasing. The assembly was in confusion, and most of them did not know why they had come together. The Jews, anxious to show that they were not sympathizers with Paul and his work, brought forward one of their own number to set the matter before the people. The speaker chosen was the craftsman Alexander, a coppersmith, to whom Paul afterward referred as having done him much evil. See, Alexander bent all his energies to direct the wrath of the people exclusively against Paul and his companions. But the crowd, seeing that he was a Jew, thrust him aside, and for about 2 hours they all with one voice cried out, "Great is Artemis, Diana, of the Ephesians." At last there was a momentary silence. Then the recorder of the city, by virtue of his office, obtained a hearing. He showed that there was no cause for the present tumult and appealed to their reason. What man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is temple keeper of the great Artemis, and of the sacred stone that fell from the sky? You ought to be quiet and do nothing rash. These men here are neither sacrilegious nor blasphemers of our goddess. If therefore Demetrius and the craftsmen with him have a complaint against anyone, the courts are open, and there are proconsuls, let them bring charges against one another. We are in danger of being charged with rioting today, there being no cause that we can give to justify this commotion. And when he had said this, he dismissed the assembly. In his speech, Demetrius revealed the real cause of the tumult and also much of the persecution which followed the apostles. This trade of ours may come into disrepute. By the spread of the gospel, the business of image-making was endangered. The income of pagan priests and artisans was at stake. The decision of the recorder and of others in the city had set Paul before the people as innocent of any unlawful act. God had raised up a great magistrate to vindicate his apostle and hold the mob in check. Paul's heart was filled with gratitude to God that his life had been preserved and that Christianity had not been brought into disrepute by the tumult at Ephesus. After the uproar ceased, Paul sent for the disciples and, having exhorted them, took leave of them and departed for Macedonia. Paul endures opposition of enemies and desertion of friends. Paul's ministry in Ephesus had been one of incessant labor, many trials, and deep anguish. He had taught the people in public and from house to house, instructing and warning them. Continually he had been opposed by the Jews. And while thus battling against opposition, he was bearing on his soul a heavy burden for all the churches. News of apostasy in some of the churches caused him deep sorrow. Many a sleepless night was spent in earnest prayer as he learned of the methods employed to counteract his work. As he had opportunity, he wrote to the churches, giving reproof, counsel, admonition, and encouragement. In these letters there were occasional glimpses of his sufferings in the cause of Christ. Stripes and imprisonment, cold and hunger and thirst, perils by land and by sea, in the city and in the wilderness, from his own countrymen, from the heathen, and from false brethren, all this he endured for the gospel. He was defamed, reviled, made the offscouring of all things, perplexed, persecuted, troubled on every side, in jeopardy every hour, always delivered unto death for Jesus' sake. The intrepid apostle almost lost heart. But he looked to Calvary and with new ardor pressed on to spread the knowledge of the crucified. He was treading the blood-stained path Christ had trodden before him. He sought no discharge from the warfare till he should lay off his armor at the feet of his Redeemer.